We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Halloween. This is Lore Keepers, the boundless venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein we never give that enough stink, you know? We're the opus.
I think we need to give it more
what
stank.
Happens when... Yeah, more stank, you're right. Like, we are the world-renowned podcasting opus. Wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is sung into being before your very ear holes. I am Frank.
I'm Carter.
And whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes or maybe crabs, burn steel to usurp the Carrion Throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to kickflip. God. You know what that makes me think of? It does not make me think of Dragon Age. It makes me think of Spyro.
Really?
Yes, in Spyro, you're the dragon, you skateboard.
Oh.
Did you ever play those games?
I did when I was a young lad.
Dude, the remaster or the Spyro Reignited is like one of the... Oh, dude, that's my nostalgia right there. Because I grew up playing those first three Spyro games. That's some solid shit right there. Just really a thick pipe, you know? Some solid shit. Anyways, sit a while by... Whether you're doing any of that shit, sit a while by our fire, O weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale. So no preamble this week. If you want to listen to that, just listen to the end of the episode. Realize, like, been taking a little while to get into these episodes. As of this moment in this recording, it's been over an hour. Although, yeah, so, like, if you want to listen to what that hour had to say, I'll actually say there's some pretty cool world-building shit that Carter got into with a game he's been playing recently that's super interesting. Yep. We also talk a little bit about Mankind Divided, but that is all you're going to get from us, because we are going to jump right into it. This week, we're going to be taking a new path, a new something special.
Well-trodden.
Carter had an idea, and I'm like, it sounds really vague, but I'm also super interested by the idea to see where he's going. So what we're going to be doing this week is we are going to be starting a new ancestry, a new, you know, you could call it a race if it was sort of, you know, if it wasn't Halloween. I just realized that there was like not a lot of like unique. We have a couple of unique ancestries. The Dingir, you know, are a very interesting sort of cosmic entity, but they're not like there are versions of that elsewhere. And Rachel and I have been playing through Gloomhaven recently, and we were playing through Gloomhaven, and like the character types are like really interesting. So like one of them is like the Cragheart, which is this like, I think it might be a rock being or something, but a Cragheart specifically is like you have a source of magic, or you should have a source of magic in the center of your chest. But that's like a gemstone, but because they don't, they're known as a Cragheart, and I think they like eventually will go insane or be destroyed or something. That kind of shit is cool. Or like, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so I was inspired by the different like character classes or just like people in Gloomhaven, and I was like, man, we could really up our variety game. So we're gonna do something that is specific to the Marian Ocean, but also has a special history. This is sort of the precedent here, the foundation. It has a special history with Potisari, and specifically the island of Tencetung, which does have a volcano. If I don't know if that was relevant.
Is that relevant? It is relevant.
Okay, it is relevant.
Because otherwise it wouldn't be Potisari.
I guess it wouldn't. Anyways, so Carter mentioned, he whispered like four words into my ear before we started, and I was like, "Ooh, I want to know where this is going." And he So I don't know if you want to start there or if you want to start somewhere else.
Dear listeners, I wanted to make sure Frank was on board because we are a team here. And so I don't want to try to start something he that won't follow me down the path on. All right. So I looked him in the eyes and I cupped his chin and I said, sentient volcanic lava crabs.
I don't think you need both the volcanic and the lava in there as descriptors.
I agree.
As opposed to magma crabs?
As opposed to magma crabs.
Those are the cousin ancestry that don't come up above ground.
Exactly. Those sub
actually, look, hey, we already have a sub ancestry. Great. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So on the island of Tenteltung, there is a volcano. And inside this volcano, as maybe in many volcanoes across Sadar, there is a group of
lava
crab-like.
I thought you were going to say Genasi, fire Genasi.
No, Genasi are boring. Though I have no doubt that the Genasi may make their homes in the warrens.
In volcanoes?
In the warrens, well, of the crab magma.
Because really quick little side note, I mean, I think that if we're talking about volcanoes, they probably would be pretty good spans.
Yeah.
You know, so I could see there being spans where, and Genasi definitely spend most of their time like around or near spans, because we kind of talked about that being sort of the root of their shit. I don't know if we ever tied this together, but maybe that's where a Genasi soul comes from. It's from the magic of the confluence of the magic from like the materium running into the primordium.
Maybe, or maybe, you know, it's from their mum. Who knows?
Could be. How is Babby formed? How is Genasi Babby formed?
Not by crab.
Okay, anyways, yeah, crabs.
So imagine this. Do we need... So the first question I thought to myself, Frank, is that, well, these are soul beings. Do we need to place them somewhere in our history? Because obviously they need to be relevant somehow. And they're not humans, so they're not created to become gods. They're not
right.
They're not elves. You know, they're not messengers between the humans and the gods. They're not any of the Dosamai descended ancestries. So I thought, what if there was another ancestry that had some duty in the center of the earth with the Emerald?
That's definitely possible. I mean, remember that not all of the ancestries are necessarily born out of, like, a lot of them can trace their roots back to that, but it's not exclusively that. You know, for instance, the Dragonborn were created as, you know, mindless shock troops for the Chromatics. The Tieflings were born of humans who were seeking demonic packs to get free from the elves. I don't know if we have an origin for the Arakakra, but that's something we should investigate. And I don't think, likewise, we have a true origin for the Beastfolk. Dingir were a formation of the Aspect Zone, like intent will. And yeah, so I guess what I'm saying is like, they could have been created at any point in history. Even though, like, we've talked about the Merfolk, both the Merfolk and the Sea Elves are a manifestation of, like, elven bodies that have taken on aquatic, you know, sort of like magical evolution to compensate for their condition, for their situation. So, I mean, it could be. Yeah, I wouldn't be against that. Yeah, I think
we can leave that underdeveloped as we like, but I want to put that out there as a possible version.
Yeah.
Which is like,
okay,
making the Erebor crystal maintain its like flexibility to like do magical weird shit by like having it like sit up top or like be floating in this like lava pool, which they like tend to the lava.
I do like that idea. I think that sounds pretty fucking cool. Okay, can we pin that for just a second? Because before we go any further, I feel like I want to know more about, like, first of all, when you say crab.
Yes.
Are you saying just a literal fucking crab? Like, I'm thinking like the you can get the crabs in Skyrim with the monocle and top hat through modding. Or are we talking like a crab, like the same way that a horse is to a centaur kind of thing, where like maybe it's like a drider, you know, that has like a spider like body? Or is it, you know, do they actually have a full-on crustacean form, but like maybe they have four or six legs and then they have an upper body with, like, you know, how humanoid are they?
I wanted to push against the humanoidness because, you know,
okay,
different body shapes represented.
Sure. Yeah, totally. I'm not against that.
So yeah, I think they're just big crabs.
Okay. How do they, because that does make them like inherently kind of incompatible with humanoid civilization.
Yes.
And like the facilities and the, you know, the use of tools. Like, do they still have ways that they're,
I mean, crabs. You've seen the GIF.
That's why it's a GIF. I mean, yes, but like, what if they had, could you, I'm wondering if you could meet me partway. I'm actually pretty okay with the idea that they're literally just like fucking, are they big or just like, are they just like little crabs? Like, do they just like this big?
I think they're a little bit bigger. They're like maybe the size of like a dog.
Dog-sized. I love it. Okay, that's great. So they're like a couple feet across. Like, would you meet me partially and say that they have kind of like a semi-opposable pincer with like a couple others so that they have some grip of some kind?
What if they have four arms? Two pincer arms and then some more like opposable pincers.
Crabs have eight legs, right?
I don't know how many legs crabs have. I'm not an expert on crabs. I know they have little eye stalks. Very cute.
Man, these dudes are weird. I think that crabs typically have, they actually have eight legs and also two pincers.
Ooh.
So maybe they have two primary appendages, and then two of their legs can be used as like a secondary.
Sure.
But maybe the two legs, they're more prehensile, but they don't actually have like you know, any additional digits. Whereas like the pincers, because like, if they were tending to the Erebor crystal, I don't know how much they would be using tools or whatever, but I don't know. There's kind of like a reverse evolutionary thing here that I'm thinking about, which is the reason why we have more intelligent brains is because our bodies, because we were efficient hunters, we didn't need to use all those calories to like maintain a gait on four legs, right? And so that freed up more. At least this is, last time I checked, this is sort of like the scientific thinking behind it, is like that freed up those calories to be used towards like brain power and stuff. And then the brain power continued to enhance our ability to hunt and gather. So then it was like advantageous and it continued to build on itself until we got better and better at it. So there's a clear correlation between like a body type that is, that tools would be useful for an intelligent mind and having an intelligent mind. So I guess my question is when they were tending to the Erebor seed, did they have an intelligent mind and did they use tools, or were they more like just like assistants to or accomplices with the Dosumai who were tending to the crystal at the time? Do you think they were using tools when they were working with the Erebor crystal?
I don't have strong feelings one way or another.
Okay.
I think maybe the best way to go about it is to say yes, though.
Okay.
Maybe they had like lava rakes or something. You got to rake the lava.
I think I like, do you know what trolls look like in World of Warcraft? Or like what their hands look like?
I don't know what their hands look like. I know what they look like.
They have just two fingers and a thumb, and I'm kind of wondering if we do a similar thing where like the crabs have two claws that have like some ability to, like an extra digit or something, so, or not digit but like an extra joint, so they can flex a little bit more. Okay. They still work like pincers, so I can do some pincing.
I see.
But my main question is what would the use of a pincer be over like opposable, or different thought, tell me what you think of this. We could make them asymmetric.
Ooh.
A lot of crabs have one large claw and one small claw.
Take the strong hand. So
what if they have like a fuck you, fuck me up. Oh, just, yeah. I mean, like, what if they had, like, one hand that was, or one pincer that was more dangerous, more weaponized, and another that was, like, more for tools? I mean, that could be a really interesting duality to explore in then their civilization or their society, where it's sort of like there's the halves of us, or there's, like, it would show up in language where, you know, sometimes... Okay, would you
I made that was a reference, Frank. I don't know if you know that reference.
I don't know this one. Is that... That's not from Schitt's Creek, is it?
I don't really know where it is.
That actor looks like the actor from Schitt's Creek. Okay, great. Good. So you quoted
it's
something
scary
you
movie.
Know.
It's scary movie.
Okay, gotcha. So he just has like a tiny hand.
Yeah.
But do you like that idea? Like, I don't know. What do you think? Like having sort of like a powerful, very large, dangerous pincer, but then also like a more sort of prehensile. Yeah. Yeah. A strong hand and a not one. Okay. Because then, like that also would show up in their language and their turn of phrase, maybe even their ideology. That they're sort of like, how are you approaching a problem? Do you use your right claw or your left claw? You know, not really like right and left brained, but similar.
Yes, 100%. I like that.
Okay, all right. So I mean, yeah, I feel like that's kind of a picture of what they look like. And so they've got eight legs. Eight legs?
Eight legs.
And two of them can kind of act as secondary, like they can kind of swivel them up and use them to, like, adjust and manipulate things. Are a lot of their tools, like, being carried underneath their belly?
They get, like, lowrider belts.
like, because they're, like, you know, like, facing the ground like this, and, like, they're kind of cupping things, like, to them with their front two legs, like, hugging them to themselves. Maybe they have, like, little... like fanny packs,
oh, yes,
the, like on their underside, yeah, that they stick stuff into. A lot of, and also I'm just like imagining like a worker's belt. Do they wear clothes? That's a lot of questions about these crabs.
I think that they probably have some way to express themselves. Probably not clothes, maybe like hats.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I don't think they would need clothes because I don't think they're probably going to do very well outside of their extremely hot environment. Yeah. Because here's my main thought with all of this was I would love to create another ancestry that a person could conceivably play. And first of all, the idea of playing a small crab sounds amazing. Your creature size is small. And I don't know, you're a fucking crab.
Yeah.
That sounds great. My main question is do you think that they could be an adventurer? Like, could they actually survive?
I think they could be, but it's one of those things where, like, seeing one of these crab boys outside of the crab land is very rare.
Maybe there's, like, we can build a sort of an in-lore solution to this where, like, they have, to keep themselves warm, they need to, like, carry hot coals with them everywhere or something. And so, like, those who do adventure have, like, a little enchanted, you know, hand warmer, essentially, that they put their entire body in. They're wearing like a crab diaper, basically a hot crab diaper.
I like that.
That has a bunch of coals in it.
Yes.
So they were helping to tend the Erebor crystal. How do they end up in the Marian Dominion? Or in the Marian Ocean, I should say, and specifically Potosata.
I think with the destruction of the Erebor crystal, it's just like they were scattered and, you know, they like ran around lava vents and shit and they were just like scattered. Like when you run into a bunch of crabs and they all like run away.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So, okay. So they were, as they kind of came out towards the surface, they were coming through a lot of deep sea vents, which would make sense. You know, if they're trying to escape what's going on down below. During Avum Secunda, would they have even tried to escape the Earth at all? Or no, they probably would have been better to just kind of hang out in the lava flows and shit.
Exactly.
Where it's where they're comfortable.
So I think size small, I think they probably live a fairly long time, like at least 80 years.
I feel like there are crabs in our world that live like at least 200.
Yeah, as I think at least 80 years. And I think that they are immune to fire, but vulnerable to cold. What do you think of that?
Sorry, what?
I think they're immune to fire, but vulnerable to cold.
I think so. Question, can they swim in lava?
I think there's problems with like buoyancy and stuff, where it's like you can't really swim in lava. Like,
is it like, oh, like it's legitimately because it's just molten rock, it's just too dense?
Yeah. It's like you basically do like a weird floating thing.
Maybe they like sauna on lava or something.
Maybe.
Like they like it that hot. I mean, I feel like fire giants do shit like that. I could see that being, so they're straight up like immune not only to fire damage, but also lava, yep. Like in general.
In general. I think they can get too hot, but it's like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like being in a sauna. We can get too hot and you can like pass out, but you're not just going to like die immediately.
Is it because of what their shells, their carapaces are made of that allows them their immunity to fire damage? Or is it like, is it rock or is it magic? Or is it, you know, like a metal like tungsten or something?
I think it that they have like, so here we go. So they have like a bony skeleton, like exoskeleton, or like a carapace made of like organic material. And I think that they basically wear like rocky bits
to protect themselves.
Yeah.
And sorry, I missed the first half of that because I got distracted seeing that Japanese spider crab.
There's a thing.
What was the first half of it?
That they have like a carapace, and then their carapace has like indentations that they put like rocks on.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, because they were originally surviving around the Erebor crystal, uh-huh. You know. So, like,
You know how, like, hermit crabs go and, like, find discarded shells and, like, get in them? It's like that. Mm-hmm. Except they, like, tailor rocks to their bodies.
Sure. I had a thought. Maybe their societies, there were sort of these oceanic chunks of, so around the Erebor crystal, there were like oceanic sized or like island sized chunks of rock that were floating on like a magma sea. And that was where their communities initially like lived.
I like that.
Which is just crazy. That's like, so like, that's so far from what.
Yeah. I think they might, I don't know if they have a burrow speed, but they might like get the natural magical ability to shape Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like they have a
also trip or something. What if, I don't know if I've ever formally thought about this, but what if what the center of the world looks like is you travel through the outer core, inner core, or outer, what, the upper mantle, lower mantle, however that works. And as you get closer, all of a sudden, everything stops and there is just open space for like, I don't know, half a mile or more. Or maybe even a couple of miles, and then you just drop, and all you can see is just like this massive ocean of lava. So there's almost like this. I mean, it definitely have to be magical, but like this space where if you were on one of those islands, you could look up into the darkness, and if somebody was shining a light up there or something, like you could see it. And obviously, like this stuff makes no physical sense because that's like ridiculous and the pressure would be too incredible, and like there's probably already still pressure problems or whatever, but I don't know, if we're just doing magical stuff here, maybe the Erebor seed was completely insulated, perfectly insulated on all sides by an air gap with a magma ocean or something.
Yeah.
I feel
like the mantle's already kind of a magma ocean.
Well, maybe it is. I guess if stuff, yeah. Yeah,
I don't know if Siddhartha has maybe a mantle. I assumed it did.
I mean,
I guess it has plate tectonics.
Yeah, in order to have plate tectonics, you need a mantle, right? Yeah. Yeah. I think it does. I mean, maybe there's some like paradimensionality going on. Like straight up, like you keep on going down, and instead of going to the center of the world, you're like passing through different dimensions or something like that. Like there's paradimensionality built into the planet. I could easily see that being a thing if you've got a a moon-sized core of crystal that is protect, like that is creating a magical field.
Yeah,
you know, this is not a
what
we think of as a naturally created planet is doesn't it gets thrown out the window when you're involving magic in and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so we got these crabs.
Yep.
They're hanging out on islands. Then the world core explodes. They are now riding those islands up towards the surface very quickly.
Surfing crabs.
I know they come out on vents. Yeah. When do they like sort of start making their way? Maybe they never really come out that much at all.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I think they're very like underdarky and.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they use their like big claws like a hoe, and then they like plant.
Oh, that's
and
fun.
They use like they plant like magma fucking carrots or something. I don't know.
What if that's something that's like a shame? Is to use your claw, use your large claw for anything other than war or violence is actually seen as sort of like a misuse. Like only people of a low class would use their claw to do anything other than violence because that's what it was made for.
You think that
and so like the people who are hoeing or whatever, who are doing like agriculture like stuff for them, cultivation, are actually like pariahs or something.
Ooh, that's interesting. And I like to think that they like gild up their big claw and they like make it fancy. It's like, you know, the pride of a crab is their how polished their big claw is, and like they put like necklaces on it and stuff.
Yeah, I think there might be different like different castes based on different societies or whatever, and maybe not all of them might have castes or whatever, but one of the castes would be that they pride themselves on having never used their claw and never needing to, and sort of like seen as kind of an elevation of peace maybe sometimes, but also more of a we don't need to get our own hands dirty, like
our claws.
Pincers. Well, yeah, we don't need to get our own claws dirty. We are, you know, wealthy enough to have other people do it. Do they have commerce?
I think they have some primitive form of commerce, sure. They barter instead of using like gems, or maybe they use gems instead of gold.
Well, instead of using the word primitive, my question is just more like, do you think that they need to? Like, I don't know. I mean, their society is clearly so different from our own that it throws a lot of what we normally think of as like, quote unquote, civilized out of the window. I don't know. Like, because we could just say that they have sort of a post-currency approach to things. So just like everything is provided for in, not in a utopian way, but in a way where it's just like, because maybe they are thinking on a more, maybe their minds work more hive-like. Not to say that they have hive intelligence. I think that they are individually intelligent. Yes. But, you know, it could be that the way that their brains are ordered is they're always thinking of the group instead of as themselves as independent entities, which maybe then also makes their adventurers eat all the stranger to their own society, you know, because what good are they doing to the whole? Maybe they are sent out sometimes by like the Crab Council or something to go on an adventure to retrieve something. But even in that situation, you know, so they might be that or they might be other just normal ass like, nah, I'm going to go do my own thing. But in either situation, I think they might still be seen by their peers as being like, what good are you? If we went down that road, we don't have to go down that road. It was just kind of like I could see it being this way.
Yeah, I think I like that. Let's do that.
Do you have a good name for him?
Oh, gosh.
We should play off of Cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. Not like have the name Cancer or anything, because, again, that means more than just that.
How about the Kavas?
But, Kavas? Kavas. How are you spelling that?
C-A-V-A-S.
Okay. Yeah, Kavas. I like that. Kavas. The Kavas. Yeah. Okay. Maybe, what if it was K-A-V-A-S?
Sure.
I don't know. The harder K sounds make me think more like rocks. What does their speech sound like? What is their language? Maybe it's less
I think
like...
it's more clicks.
Maybe it's... more like clicks and hisses. Yeah. They might actually use like press steam out of their shell. Ooh. They like pressurize and push steam out of their shell, and that like can be used as almost like a as a way of making different sounds.
And there's like beautiful Kavaran like singers who like have like really high pitched steam, and then they like modulate it almost like a flute or something.
Yeah. And it doesn't sound anything like any music that we think of as conventionally as like music, but there is like an orchestra of sounds that have still a rhythm to them. And
they like tap the bottom of their shells at a beat or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like there is still something really elegant to it, but it doesn't sound like, you know, a lute or something. It's not like somebody playing a viol or whatever. It's its own thing very much so. And, you know, it sounds almost, you know, more, just because there's lack of a better word, excuse me, in my mind here, but like more primitive, like something. And by that, I mean like more ancient, sort of older, primordial. More connected to the world. Primordial is really the word I was thinking of. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. So what's their relationship to the people of Parasati?
I think there's probably some amount of gem trading or ore trading where it's like they just have access to it. It's easy for them to get. And, you know, because there's just a lot of ore and gem formation near lava.
Are there any Kavarians who live in town?
Maybe like one or two, but like I think that they're like they sit in the sun for like 10 hours where they do anything.
Are they even capable of speaking in common?
I don't imagine so, no.
No, I don't think they do. They probably, maybe they have, there's probably enough enchanting that goes on that you could get a, like, essentially like a comprehend languages spell, yeah, or like a, you know, a tongue spell or whatever that's called, that's like built into a stone. And so then they might have relationships with like, you know, magicians or I don't know, that Magician's Academy or whatever, who then has export students, you know, who's fashioned, you know, 100 or 200 of these things over their lifetime, or like the lifetime of kind of their, did we come up with a word for like magical genealogy? Not who your parents are, but who your master was. Do you know what I'm saying?
It just sounds like mentorship to me, but I don't think we've come up with the word.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Is there a word for that in, like, I think a lot of times,
pedigree is the word used in, like, academia. Like, who taught you?
Okay.
Your pedigree.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I know that I think about Kung Fu, and, like, in a lot of martial arts, like, it is common for people to trace their, who was their master and who was their that person's master, like, back to... Do you know who your master's master was?
I do. I've actually been the student of my master's master.
Right. And so what I'm saying is like, I don't know if there's a word for that, but like, that's kind of what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. But I couldn't follow it up a third generation though. I don't know who my master's master's
master is. Anyways, not to belabor that too much, but I think it'd be fun to come up with a word for that. That's something for the record, the lore keeper, one day when I get to this episode. You know, in 25 years. But anyways, yeah, so they have this when they have these relationships with the, you know, the enchanters, I could see some Kavarians like having, you know, I could see them having their own, I don't know if I'd call it a burrow, but like maybe, because there's not, it wouldn't even be that many, there's maybe 20 total that live in town, but they have their own kind of courtyard, if you will, like an apartment building essentially, that has been, some of them have been repurposed to be, they have like hot coals and a bed of hot coals in the center of it, and you'll occasionally like look down and you'll just see these little crabs like walk sideways and sit on the coals and then flip over onto their backs for a little while and then they get back up and then go into their like their essentially their K Jewelers shop that they've been running to sell jewelry. And then that, because that then does question, why are they participating in economy?
Maybe they get stuff that they otherwise couldn't have up here on the surface.
It really is more of a form of bartering still, huh? Yeah, or maybe, I mean, maybe it's literally because there are some services that are outside the extent of what their society is capable of, but it still kind of would benefit from.
Maybe they really
so
like
for chocolate. Instance, like that. Okay, you know, that's actually a really fun idea. I don't know if it's chocolate, but I love the idea that they have some like something very like lame that is the equivalent of like a narcotic to them, like bread. You know, the idea of like consuming bread like gives them a high, or a specific fruit that somebody creates that's like, it's sugar, you know, it could just be literally sugar, but sugar is like a narcotic to them, and so they get like addicts who need the sugar and are just like constantly looking for it. What if it's sugar? I don't know. Well, sugar is just carbohydrates, though. How else would their bodies survive?
I think it's chocolate.
Okay.
Like they get like hot.
We can definitely come.
They get like magma cocos or something.
Oh my gosh. You make me want a hot chocolate. I do really like this idea, though. I think, so just to follow this up really quick. Because here was what my thought was for why they would conceivably need to like participate in capitalism or just economy in general, is somebody's got to pay the wizard. But it's not necessarily money that they're making on their behalf. It's money that's part of the pool of their society. So like all of the people or all of the Kavarians who would be part of this, you know, little courtyard.
I think very few of the Kavarians have these stones you're talking about. I think more likely they just carry around like a tablet that they like write in chalk on. And they like hold
that's kind of fun. I do like that idea.
Because you know, stone is in aplenty, so they like just walk around with this like slate tablet, and when you try to talk to one, they're just like, you just see it like fold out the little tablet on the bottom of them, and then they like write something with their pincer and then like hold it up. You're like, okay.
No, I agree with you. I think that the majority of the, let's say the if there are is about 20 that live in town, the probably like 15 or 16 of them don't have these stones, and it might just be like 3 or 4 of them that do, because they're the only ones who actually really talk to people enough to necessitate.
Yeah, like they're the ones in the
shop. I think their society would be seen as having some selflessness, the humanoid ancestries, but I think to them it's not even part of the equation. Like that thought doesn't compute because it's just like, well, it's less beneficial for me to have it than this other, you know, than this other Kavarian. So the other Kavarian, of course, gets it. You know, it's kind of like a logical argument there. But anyways, yeah. So like, somebody's got to pay the wizards, or I don't know. You know, if it's not the wizards who are bringing a lot of the stones, maybe they have a deal with, probably the town mayor or you know, whoever is like running the city. I don't remember what we called that position. It might just be mayor. Where something is brought up the mountain, you know, something is brought up and dropped into the Tenzin volcano for them. Or yeah, more maybe it is a barter system where they get that money and then they use that money to pay for a specific good that they're looking for from the town government or something.
Yeah, I think so.
I like the idea of it being chocolate. Do they just eat normal stuff otherwise? Like, what are they eating? Are they eating rocks? Are they eating and minerals? Or are they eating like food?
I think they eat food, but it's like, you know, weird shit. Like, I don't know, lava fungus.
Well, it sounds like there's like a whole ecosystem of lava or heat friendly life that can survive.
It's like,
you know,
the worms
in the caldera.
It's like
of a
deep,
volcano
deep sea vent worms, you know, those
kind of, I mean, I've seen like, you know, videos of people of like deep sea dive, you know, vents and stuff like that,
and they're like the wacky inflatable arm men with just like the worms.
Yeah
I think they're called like tunnel worms or something like this. But yeah, they're just really long, and they just like feed off the heat, and the like they eat the like arsenic compounds that come out of the vents.
Right, man, life is weird. There are some weird versions of life.
Yeah, so I think that that's the kind of thing where they're plants that like they take the warmth and convert them to, you know, like sugars or.
Sure. Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, okay. And they cultivate them in their own way.
By the way, isn't there like a poisonous gas that. Oh, ammonic. I think that ammonic based life forms is also like a high possibility. Like water is useful, but like ammonia could be just as useful in some ways. And so it's like there could be entire ecosystems that of wide variety of creatures that exist in our universe that are based on ammonia, not on which just is a bizarre idea to me. That sounds so strange because ammonia is extremely toxic to us.
Isn't Titan like that? Titan.
One of the, I think it might be Titan has a deep ocean of ammonia, far below the surface. It's like a couple miles down below the ice. Ice is also made of ammonia.
Titan is primarily composed of ice and rocky material, including a crust of ice and a subsurface layer of ammonia-rich liquid water.
That's Titan. Okay, yeah. So there's been postulation that Titan could have simple life, which I think I shared this with you before. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on the podcast, but there's a really good book out there called. Oh, I think it's called Rare Earth, which it basically makes the argument that life is actually extremely abundant and may be all over the universe. Intelligent life may be exceedingly rare, like. Maybe we are the only sentient creatures in our entire galaxy, or there might only be a couple others, and we might not ever meet them. We probably won't, which is like a crazy thing to think about. Look up cosmic pessimism sometime. Or just watch Ad Astra. Anyways, sad Brad
with the pit.
Yeah, a sad Brad Pitt movie. It's a weird movie. It feels like it's trying to be Oscar bait somehow, but it's also extremely sci-fi. But it's like sci-fi in the way that your like uncle is really into NASA, like NASA's his homepage, and he like constantly is looking at pictures of like solar system of like way zoomed out and sort of more the ambiguous cold barren rocks and, you know, spinning orbs of, you know, nuclear energy and stuff, as in, you know, suns and planets and stuff. Yeah. And it's like that version of sci-fi that's very artistic, but artistic as like a rendition of, I don't know, it's a weird movie. I actually like it, but it's really slow. Like you need to settle in, because it's the kind of movie that you just chill out to. Like, I'd put it in the same bucket as Koyaanisqatsi. Scotsy.
I see.
Yeah. Anyways, we're definitely getting on in time. Should we? What else do we want to do with the Cavians? I feel like we've only just scratched the surface here. There's a lot that we could do here with them.
Yeah.
For starters, like, what is their do they have, I don't know if you call it a town or if it's boroughs or whatever, but like what do they do to the base of a volcano to kind of make it livable? And what are people extracting? Isn't a caldera like a buried mouth of a volcano? Like it's not actually exposed to air, or maybe not.
What is it called? It's a volcanic.
It might be
crater.
Either.
Caldera is a large cauldron-like hollow that forms shortly after the emptying of a magma chamber in a volcanic eruption.
Okay. So it's like the earth kind of collapsing and filling in the
space. It fills in the space where there was once magma. Okay, so it's not really a caldera.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we kind of talked about it as potentially being a caldera. Like it's a, not inert, but like a slumbering volcano that probably isn't going to wake up for a long time. But still hot enough and active enough where like there's tons of rich minerals that are near the surface. Like it maybe erupted sometime in the near past, like in the last 10,000 years or so. Yeah. Because here's the thing. Even if it is a caldera, that could still just be the entrance to their home. And then you just follow holes down to where the magma actually is. Yeah. But I do kind of like the idea of there being like an exposed Like, you can see the lava if you're standing up and over the edge. Classic, you know, stereotypical volcano style. They're truly the bimbo of mountains.
There you go.
No, but what does it look like? Are they... First of all, do we do a caldera or do we do, like, an open mouth?
Let's do open mouth. That sounds more exciting.
Okay. Are they... Do they just have a, like rafts of rock that are floating on the lava? Are they like in the ringing around the sides, the edges of it?
I think they're rimmers.
Okay.
They're all about the rimming.
They're ringers?
Rimmers.
Ringings?
Rimmers.
Rimmers? They rim? Yeah. They like to rim?
They do the rim jobs.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm kind of picturing like lots of little pockets in the side of a wall. Sort of like, was it the Apache? Who am I thinking of? Who like built cities in the side of a cliff face?
I know what you mean. Yeah, the like Adobe stuff. Yeah,
I think Adobe. I think it's the Adobe people. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. What else do we want to do with them? I mean, we could talk about their agriculture, if they have, or whatever, you know, the idea of cultivation is. You know, maybe they like sort of groom little shrimpies or something. I could see them like grooming little. Oh, dude, they use the center. The reason why they leave that open, or there's maybe a couple of islands, but it's for cultivation. You know, there you know how fish farms have just kind of like an open bath that all of the fish are hanging out in. Maybe it's something like that.
Maybe.
And they are, you know, they'll cast nets. They draw out all these tiny little shrimps. Yeah, I imagine that they have a cuisine that pretty much only they can stomach.
Probably.
Do they eat it raw or do they cook it?
I don't know how they would cook it. Maybe I think they.
That's kind of what I'm wondering. Like, can you even cook it? Because it's probably like 600 degrees.
They might like devein
already.
Maybe.
Yeah, they like devein it, and then it's a lot of sushi.
Yeah.
And like weird sort of like gritty seaweed type stuff. What other things? Like sort
maybe
of
they
we
use,
could have
maybe
sort of like stone potatoes. Maybe they use
like a fuck ton of salt or something.
They could use a fuck ton of salt. I actually kind of like that idea. Like maybe their taste is weak. Like they don't have a very strong sense of taste. And then maybe also food isn't necessarily seen as a way of like articulating. I just kind of had a thought. How much of this is going to be feel like it's a swing from where is this even coming from? But like how much of human art is an exploration in excess? Painting or Like the idea of creating beauty or you know, food that tastes delicious or music that is really pleasing. I don't know. Is there a focus on the self with that? Maybe not. Maybe I'm making up total bullshit and that has nothing to do with anything.
I don't know where you're coming
but
from.
But like, I guess basically what I'm trying to ask is if you had a society of creatures that did not have a sense of self in the way that we do, but they still have an extremely high intelligence. Would they have art like we do, or would their art come from something that is done collectively?
I'm gonna,
would food be fuel to them, or would food be an expression of art?
I'm going to push a little bit here and say they do have a sense of self. It's just they're very communally minded.
Yeah, no, and yeah, to be clear, I wasn't saying that they don't have a sense of self. I think you kind of need to have a self-awareness to be a sentient creature. That's kind of what sentience is. But what I mean is more just like that it's... The idea of the self doesn't equate or doesn't mean the same thing for them as it does, like part of a whole, you know, is more, I think, how they see their relationship to community, or that community is maybe it's that community is a living being that they are also a part of while they are simultaneously themselves. Instead of seeing like I am less than or I am only part of, it is like I am 100% myself. I am also 100% involved in this other larger organism, and we are both the same creature.
The self is defined.
And I share my personhood. I share my personhood with thousands of my kin, but I am also still myself.
The self is defined through the community.
Right. It's defined through both. And it's like not just your relationship to the community, but also your community's relationship to you. They sort of have a dual sentience. Which is really fun. That's got some very strange philosophical implications.
Proper citizenship, as Rousseau would have thought.
Is that like a thing? Like the idea of seeing the community as being like a living entity that you are a part of?
Less living and more like as something you have certain responsibilities to, like you would have responsibilities to yourself.
Okay.
Like this, it's said that the citizen in Rousseau's sense doesn't live for themselves, but lives for their community.
Okay, sure. All right.
And that's how they live for themselves, is through the community. If you follow.
So, so they're living in this crater. This was the other thing I was going to ask. What makes them unique to the Marian Ocean?
Are they?
That's what I was thinking. That was my intentional, that was my initial thought was yes, that they are not that they can't be found elsewhere, but they're not in large enough numbers that they are creating societies elsewhere.
I think maybe this is where the most maybe volcanic activity is in this ocean. So that's just kind of where they
sure. went.
And that maybe there's a lot of the other ancestry within the like mantle, where there's just like a lot of the magma crabs.
I think that's what it is. I think it's that they are kind of everywhere below the ground, and that, I mean, you know, one day we'll take the whole veins of the earth approach and like and treat that as its own. That could be its own season, is just like what's going on in the world of the Underdark and below what we normally think of as the Underdark, even
the Underlight.
Sure. So far down that rock is hot and starts to heat up. Well, you know, whatever. Anyways, there's because yes, that the Marian Ocean, for whatever reason, maybe because it has a lot of active volcanoes and there aren't a lot of other places in the world that have this many, it became sort of the one place where it made sense for them to come to surface and make relationships with people above ground and to kind of make that connection.
Do you think they shake hands?
I think that they do something similar. I think there's probably something akin to that. Like maybe they scissor each other's pincers. Ooh. Or something.
Say it's sexy,
Frank. Yeah, very.
I was thinking maybe they like rub each other's undersides or something.
That could be friendly. Yeah. Ooh, you know what? It could be a sign of like trust in another, is like if you use your big dangerous pincer and you sort of just like slide it on the underside of their belly, just kind of tickle it a little bit. Ooh. just a little rub, as saying like I trust you, or like, or you trust me, you know, like allowing another person to do that.
It's like when you bare your neck to your friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I do this all the time.
Yeah, totally. Yep, yeah. Oh, hey, what's up? Yeah. Yeah.
And they lick it a little bit. Oh. Just to show. No? You don't do this? Oh, well.
No, Carter. No, that's normal. Yeah. You're normal. That's totally normal. I promise.
Tickles.
What? I have, okay, we should probably start doing one-on-ones, but I had two thoughts. The first one, do they ever have visitors?
Yes, I think they do. Fire Ganassi, in particular.
They probably even share the mouth of the volcano with the Fire Ganassi.
Maybe even.
But what about, like, people who are less compatible to the heat?
Efreeti, I mean.
Or the Efreeti, sure, yeah.
I think that, yeah, there's probably people put on, like, big suits. Go down there.
Some kind of, again, using magic to augment and protect. I'm just imagining, like, could this be somewhere where, you know, in an adventuring party would need to visit the hometown of, you know, their Cavian friend that is part of the party? What are they?
It might be, though, that they, you know, we need a reduce spell on everybody so they can run through the little tunnels.
Sure. Yeah. There's that. Yes. I like that idea. Also, like maybe they have like guest spaces that are like built out of onyx or something that is like very heat resistant and has an extremely thick like base, so it's only like 100 degrees in there at all times.
I imagine that like maybe with heat resistance you could be like only a little bit uncomfortable, like just constantly sweating, yeah, instead of like dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like,
I think of like the City of Brass, you know?
You know about the boots of the Winterlands? They're boots that basically make it to where like you can be naked, but be fine if you're in like negative 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And if you're wearing like actual cold gear, you can be fine in like negative 100.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, that's pretty neat. Something like that.
Which is, you know, like the Speedo of heat repelling or something that you can wear.
Mm-hmm. Sure. What was the other thing? It was that.
It's a one-shoulder Speedo.
A one-shoulder Speedo?
Do you know about these things?
Are you talking about like a strongman's outfit where it like goes around the waist and then has one single like...
It's like a one-hip Speedo.
So it only goes over... That's
really weird. But you can look them up, but they don't leave much to the imagination, Frank.
Hang on. What is it called?
It would be like a one-shoulder, one-hip Speedo, yeah.
I'm just seeing, like, one piece is that... Okay.
Yeah, it's just like a fucking weird sling, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't even know how that
I don't know on. Either, but it does.
That's,
it's bold.
That's real weird. That is really strange.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, does it, Frank?
That's really weird. It literally just looks like when I think of like, you know, David and Goliath, David and you know, protecting his sheep with a sling and like swinging it over his head. It literally looks like that. And like, just like, just around one of the legs.
You learn something new.
Okay.
Every day.
Jesus. We got it. We should finish up here. Do you have a one?
I think that they have a sign language, which they don't need to say anything for, but it's like, you know, instead of a sign language, it is audible because it's like they like clap their claws in a certain manner.
Is it Bantu that's like that?
I don't know.
You know what I'm thinking of? There's a language that uses clicks as part of language.
I know that there's some African languages that have clicks in them, but they're like audible.
I think it might be Urdu. Maybe it's Bantu. I can't remember. But yeah, no, I'm thinking like that their language is a combination of both. Okay.
Sounds good. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, and if you're blind, then like maybe you know, like if you don't have sight, that's more difficult to...
Well, I don't think it matters like what. I think it's the noise rather than the hand gesture. It's just like they talk with their hands, but not... The movements don't mean anything. The like noise is the meaning.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Okay, I gotcha. It's not that they're moving their appendages, it's that their appendages are specifically making sound. They might actually use their two extra legs to kind of like knock against different parts of their underbelly to produce different sounds, and that's part of their language. That's fun. Cavians, man. Kavas. Right? Kavas. I like them. They are not what I thought I was gonna all get.
Right. Do you have one? Are you done?
No, I mean, my one was the visitors.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for letting us be your escape. If you forgot your worries and you want to make others forgetful, we're on every podcasting service known to the Kavas, so don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that... Okay, I'm just going to say, yes, we talked about sentient lava crabs. So yes, we talked about something that was very confusing. Of course we did. But chances are... Oh, wow. Okay. This is terrible. Yes, we did talk about something that was confusing as hell. And yes, there is context in the podcast description. Carter's like has his head in his hands. So you can check out the context there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lore Keepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast for questions or things you'd like to discuss in future episodes.
Thank you to Josh Silker for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lorekeeper's theme. And thanks to Sam Wade for the new album art. It's still new and it's still awesome. Also, Frank should probably put her Instagram on this fucking document.
Oh yeah, you can find her Instagram at by Sam Wade. It's also in the podcast description. I think it's a hyperlink there.
If Josh wants his Instagram on here, he can fuck off.
Yeah, I shouldn't really reach out to Josh about that. I don't know if he's like he and I are not as much in the loop anymore. Not like anything happened or anything. I don't know. I just like COVID happened and then I moved and I just like got busy. I should see what he's up to. Anyways. Maybe you can write a new fresh intro. Ooh. I'm definitely cutting that. There's no way I'm gonna put that idea in anybody's head. Until next time, though, don't forget there are always more kavas to kava. I don't know. Help me out here.
Always more lavas to crab.
Oh, geez, that was just as bad. All right, thanks everyone. Bye.
Bye. How you doing, Frank?
Well, I was doing good until I saw your sleepy face, and now I'm feeling extremely tired.
You didn't have any caffeine today? You didn't risk it?
No, I don't. I don't dance with that fair lady anymore.
I see.
The risk is just too great. Here, I'm feeling a little muggy, even though it's like actually kind of cold in this room. But the extra layers is just like I need to feel like I'm not constricted while we record.
Fair enough.
Do you have time to have this open?
I do.
Okay. All
right, clap on 40 seconds.
Great. Yeah, that latency doesn't seem too bad. How are you? Were you like asleep until very recently, or were you up super late, or what's going on with... Oh, you just gave me some wild eyes.
No, I woke up like at 9:30.
Okay, so you had a little bit of time to wake up.
Yeah, and I wasn't up that late. I got like 9 hours.
That's all. What do you normally get?
It varies. It depends on who you ask, me or my phone. Like, my phone would tell you that I actually got like 7 hours or something.
Oh, are you using like one of those apps that tracks how much you're asleep?
Yeah.
Does it take you a while to fall asleep, or are you awake during the night?
I don't know. I just hear what it says, and I don't remember being awake, but...
Man, I don't know how people sneak in 9 hours of sleep into their lives. Like, I think I've just come to accept that I will never sleep as much as I'm supposed to. Like, even when it's up to me, even when I have a choice, because... When I have a choice, I'm like, oh, but how could I do that if I instead could stay up and play Ori and the Blind Forest until like 2 a.m. or Ori and the Blind Forest until 1 and then spend the next 45 minutes like just sitting on the couch looking up hand like augmented keyboards. Oh, hey, you know what? Also, really quick, let's switch over to Discord.
Sure.
And actually I'm going to take this as an opportunity to, turn off my VPN as well.
All right.
Cause I don't need that shit. See you there. Don't stop recording though.
I will not.
What? You okay? What was that? What's going on with you?
I can't. There's something wrong with your mic, Frank.
Is that better?
Yes.
I am so sorry. It had both set to default, which default is just the mic in my computer, which is currently clamshell closed, so the mic is pressed up against the like the fan and everything. Oh god, that's bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, Frank.
Oh, am I? Can you still hear me?
Now I can. Yes, there was a sound like a, and then I think you kept talking and I couldn't hear you, but now I can hear you.
Oh, no, I was just like moving away from the mic to make it like hard for you to... Okay, I need to send you something here.
Also, did you watch The Rocket Man by William Shatner?
Oh, no, I didn't. I guess I'll just check it out now.
I mean, it's not a short. Fair enough.
Is this a joke or is he serious?
Hmm?
Wow. He's not singing.
What do you mean?
I can't. This is so terrible. Oh, dude, this is painful.
It's so good. And he's just like really smoking.
A lot. Also, there's like this side-by-side thing.
Yep.
It's just really weird. Giant, like King Kong Shatner on one side and then tiny Shatner on the other side. Okay. We'll just keep going with it. This is what I was going to do. It's going to send this to you. Wow. It's like
what's going on?
Internet got worse. Oh, after I turned off the
VPN was giving you the old boost.
I don't know. What am I connected to right now? Yeah, still connected to my home network. Maybe this is just a really slow website. That might be what it is. God help me. This is what I was looking at 1:45 at night last night.
I see.
Considering playing with the idea of killing in the name of... I have legitimately, like, dreamed of that device since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, but like I just like the idea of being able to just like tap on the side of my leg while I was, you know, in any position whatsoever. And it has an air mouse where you just like point at the screen like this and you just move around and gesture and you change where the mouse is pointing. It works with like basically every device. I don't know, man.
How much does it cost? Like $5,000?
No, it's technically 100 or 200, but it's got a $50 coupon on Amazon, so they're selling it for 150. I don't know if they're selling it for 40. I can't really bring myself to get it, but the idea of like being able to use my phone while I'm like actually use my phone while I'm driving and stuff, because right now it's like I use speech recognition to do things like, you know, I can say go home and whatever, but if the fan's on and the car is loud, it's hard for it to hear, and I don't know. I was also thinking about, like, home, you know, center my computer out in the living room and stuff, and it's like, truly, I don't think there's a better, like, you know, interactive home mouse and keyboard setup that is better than literally just having your hand. You don't type very fast, though.
Yeah, the typing, I imagine, would be very slow.
Yeah, because it's not like it's like an imaginary keyboard that you're typing on. That's like, you know, in 3D space. What it's doing is it's like haptic feedback combos of fingers. So you'd like tap like this, like these are the vowels A, E, I, O, U. And then like it's like the different, you know, so you have to like completely learn a whole new way of typing, which is so my shit. You know, it's my shit.
That is your shit.
To do that. So, you know. It's really not a question of if, but when. Like, I can feel like it's like a how long before my defenses completely crumble. Is it like a birthday present to myself or a Christmas present to myself is kind of the question I've been asking.
I see.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, yeah, no, so you went to bed, you went to bed at a reasonable time. You actually got like 9 hours of sleep and stuff. You just being groggy a little bit.
Yeah. And
have you had breakfast?
I haven't had breakfast.
Ah, that's maybe part of it.
Yeah, I haven't had my cup of coffee, my bagel.
You said it.
I did.
Did you say bagel?
I said bagel.
Okay. Oh, that's very, thank you. Yep. I appreciate that. I feel seen. What have you been playing lately? I was going to ask you that.
So there's one game that I recently just purchased, which I thought was very interesting, though I think it could have been done better. I think it's like The Life and Suffering of Sir Brant.
Is that the same people who made Oh, I'm gonna get this so wrong, but there was very, very lifelike looking, like very good graphics narrative that was kind of like a Final Destination or something. Wasn't there like a video game like that? And then based on what choices you made, like people lived or died. I kind of remember you telling me about this, like you're playing it with your roommate or something.
Are you talking about Until Dawn?
I think I'm talking about Until Dawn.
That I played that with my older brother years ago.
Okay. Okay.
And yes, that is a good game. One of the best games on the PlayStation 4, and it is not by the same. This is like an indie game on Steam.
Okay. What do you do?
Yes, The Life and Suffering of Sir Brant by, let's see, go to the store page. It's by 101 XP. You know, it's by Sever and published by 101 XP. And basically,
it was sorry. You totally dropped out there. I'm actually kind of wondering if maybe Discord isn't that good.
I don't know.
Seems like you're really stuttery, whereas like my internet, it's back to being normal. It was just that one website. I think maybe we go back to Duo. Sorry.
It's all right. It's a game, The Life and Suffering of Sir Brant.
Uh huh.
Developed by Sever, published by 101 XP.
Okay.
It is a narrative role-playing game. That's how they bill it. And in it, it's got this like very black and white, kind of minimalist art style. And you are just the only thing you're looking at is a journal with occasionally these like black and white pictures. Or like there's occasionally an animated scene with black and white, but very, very rare. There's only like four or five.
Okay.
And you, in the journal, you're like, it's basically you read a bit of text where you kind of laying out the scene, and then you have your character make a decision. And you choose.
Okay, it sounds like a choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Yes, very, very exactly. And you get skills based on the choices you made in childhood and adolescence. And then there are three paths. There are three big paths. The noble path, the lotless path, and the path of the priest.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's like certain, there's like four or five different like parts of your life. There's childhood, adolescence, youth, peacetime, and the revolt.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and the
and you're basically playing through like the different like people that he can be. Kind of makes me think of Mr. Nobody.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting, and I like the idea, and I love the world building. It's very, because you're like in this fantasy
kind of
realm that has like, you're in this giant empire that's ruled by these like quote unquote like better than human Arcanians, who are like light blue skin tone and are just like better and faster than humans, and they have
so
like
elves,
basically elves, and and then there are these like hereditary blood tides, they call them, which all the nobles, like all the hereditary nobles, have these blood tides, which is like your ancestors can talk to you and they give you like
wait what
power. Yeah,
dude, are you kidding me?
No.
This just sounds like our fucking shit. Have they been listening to our podcast?
I don't
like that's
so.
Just like that's a mixture of the Avaril and the racial tide pools or the ancestral tide pools.
And well, it's more rooted than that, because you like perform a ceremony like in a crypt. You have your blood mix with your ancestors' blood.
Right. Which, by the way, in reality, what it's really just talking about is just we have gone so wide with our world building. We've just included every single idea.
And
because that sounds more like a rune.
And the whole thing that's going on is mostly done the judge path, which is the noble. Basically, the only way to for a commoner, if you're born commoner, the only way to become a noble is to become a judge as a human.
Okay.
And then, you know, you have to deal with trying to promote justice for people while also balancing the fact that you have a career and there's a lot of nobles that don't want justice for the commoners.
Sure.
So you have to balance those things out. And, you know, if you ever lower justice too far down, bad things happen. And if you ever lower your career too far down, bad things happen. And you have to deal with the consequences of those things. All the while, there's strife within your own family, the Brandt family, and you're trying to, like, keep the family together because mm-hmm. there's a lot of... Because your family is very interesting because your older brother was born to a different mother, so he's a noble by blood. And your...
Oh, you're not?
No, you're not. Because you were born to a commoner.
Oh.
To the same father.
I just assumed the sir in Sir Brandt was like a, you are like a sire. You know, you have like some...
But you can be. That's the thing. You can be.
Okay.
Yeah, so your father was ennobled by the mantle, which means he became a judge and is noble by his efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Your brother is a noble, is technically ennobled by the sword, but his family isn't. The Brandt family is not ennobled by the sword. But he's okay. By blood a noble. And then, because he was born to a noble woman. And then, basically, your father's wife, first wife, dies. And he is, like, in despair. And then a woman comes to, his courtroom and is like, look, you know, I was given this child and abandoned by a nobleman. Like, can you please help me?
Mm-hmm.
And then your father's like, yes, I will. And so he takes her in and she becomes his wife. And then that's your mom. And her... And then you have an older sister who is just illegitimate, was not, you know, is out of wedlock. And she's a commoner. And so there's this, a big part of the strife in the family is that your older brother is like, look, we need to keep, you know, the sister under wraps. Cause like, she can't be seen doing stuff. She can't try to get a lot of attention because it'll just remind people that she's illegitimate and that she's part of the mm-hmm. family.
Right.
And she wants to like write poetry and do all this stuff that only nobles can do. And it's like, look, you can't do that.
Oh, only nobles can write poetry. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And so there's this strife of her fighting back because she doesn't agree with how the lots exist, which is the commoner lot, the noble lot, and the priest's lot. And so mm-hmm. she is like, you know, kind of like dipping in and out of the like circles of rebellion, talking about trying to like overthrow the nobles. And all the while, you know, she's having arguments at home, which is decreasing the home's unity. And you're like, look, I just want this family to fucking stay together. But, you know, there's all these different costs. And it's like, if you... choose to keep the family together and like really unite the family, you can convince your older brother to actually like have your father formally adopt your sister, but then your family is forever, the name is dragged through the mud for adopting an illegitimate child, and you can never be ennobled by the sword.
Yeah.
And then you can actually, like, ship her off to... there's one nobleman who, like, really takes a liking to her.
Uh-huh.
And basically, she doesn't want to marry him. But I have done that. I have tried out that ending to see where it goes. And she actually does find happiness with it.
Well, that's, I guess, good.
But she does resist it. She's like, I don't want to do this. And you're like, no, you're doing it. And it's like, oh, this feels bad.
Yeah, forcing your adopted sister to enter into a marriage with somebody she doesn't want to be married to does not sound great.
Yeah. But she gets to enjoy it eventually, Frank. It's fine. All's well that ends well.
I kind of am not, I don't know, I'm like, I think about that and I'm like, did the people who built this game, I don't know, just make a decision on behalf of the sister to make it work out? And it's like, would this have ever actually worked out? Like, I don't know. That just seems like it's a good, it sure is a good thing that, like, I mean, it makes me think of, like,
so I will say that there are better, I don't know, ways to do it.
It makes me think of, like, in TV or whatever, when people argue that, you know, hey, women should have a choice, you know, it's pro-choice or whatever, you know, whether they want to keep a pregnancy or not. And then, but like, almost invariably, they always choose to keep the baby, even when it makes like no sense to do so. And they're like completely against it because you can't show, because a writer can't bring themselves to showing an abortion on like, or in imply an abortion in a storyline, yeah. Because that would just be like, the network would never accept it. It doesn't even matter if you're like fucking the CW, you know, abortions are always like code for something traumatic. You know, it's like getting an abortion as a young woman or something is something that is seen as like horrific. And it's like, yeah, no, just fucking no.
I will.
Anyway,
say,
so it kind of makes me think of that. And maybe it's not nearly that bad. I clearly haven't, you know,
they do highlight one part. So basically, when you choose to send her off, your older brother's like, okay, well, now we cut all ties with her, never talk to her again, and the Brandt family is saved. Or it's like, and then he's like, mm-hmm. Or do you have something else to say? And then you can choose to agree with your older brother and sever all ties with her. You can choose to remain in contact with her and like still send her letters and talk to her. Or you can challenge your older brother to a fucking duel and kill him.
Wait, what? Yeah. Why?
So you can be the heir.
Why would you do that?
You can be the heir to the family. So you can be the heir.
Oh, I guess. Do things get that bloodthirsty in that world? Or would everybody be like, yeah, my neighbor just challenged his brother to a duel and he died. And so now he gets all of the will, like all of the will goes to him.
Nobles, if you think that like your brother besmirched your honor, there's a court of honor and all this stuff. So like you could argue it, but basically I chose to remain in contact. And the story basically said, because you chose to maintain contact, she had a really tough time, but you were there to comfort her.
Mm-hmm.
And she eventually found, you know, like a silver lining to the situation and actually like came to love her children and love her husband. So that's what they had to say. I'm assuming it was much worse off if you sever contact with her, and she probably suffers. But so far, and I'm taking a break from the game now because I played like 11 hours in the past like day or two. So far, I still haven't like gotten a good ending out of the revolt. Cause you can like either side with the rebels or like go with the Empire to like put down the revolt. And it's just like every single time I do it, I don't get an ending. And if you don't get an ending in it, basically it's just like neither the revolt doesn't have enough power to resist the Empire, but the Empire doesn't have enough power to put down the revolt decisively. So then everyone just fights for like a really long time, and it spreads to the rest of the Empire, and they're just fighting for like 100 years, and everything sucks.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, I know. That's the ending I keep getting.
I kind of wish, I don't know. I almost wish that it, I don't know. That's just, it sounds wild. Like, I don't know. It's, I can't imagine how hard it is to build a game like that, but it seems like it only adds in difficulty when you end up in a situation where it sounds like it's a both sides-ism. Like, I know it's there's nothing that sounds like it's judging, you know, the Empire or the Revolt, but there is like it's almost like putting them on the same grounds when I feel like the real solution might be more just like, well, if the revolt wasn't successful, then the Empire quells it, you know, effectively and crushes it, because that's what empires do. Like, revolts are extremely hard to actually make happen because typically when you're revolting against the people in power, they're in power, they have more power than you.
Well, yeah, and I think the idea is that the revolt was like big enough that the Empire put it down, but they didn't put it down by the roots. And so like the people in the revolt escaped and went to other places and started more revolts, and like basically it spread. But if the Empire was stronger and, you know, was more decisive in how they handled it, they could have stopped it, any and all other revolts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically the one complaint I have about the game, because it is a really cool game, I love the world building, is that there's very interesting role playing with the gods. They're these two twin gods, but The complaint I have is that a lot of the choices are locked behind having made certain other choices. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, if you didn't do this one other thing, you cannot pick this choice. And if you did not do this one other thing, you cannot pick this choice. And then so sometimes you get to a choice where it's like, I can't pick any of these except like bide my time. And that's frustrating.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm kind of so okay. Wow, I mean, it sounds like you're really I picked the right cherry from the bush with this one. Man, you really been thinking about this game a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I've put, as I said, like 11 hours into it just recently, and I'm like, it's a good game, but I definitely feel like it's not like a choose your own adventure. It's a kind of, if you want the good ending, choose the right adventure. And that feels a bit bad.
Yeah, that seems, versus like Paper Please, which is, you know, I think of, is sort of where my mind goes to in this kind of situation of like an indie game with multiple endings that has to do with the choices that you make. And it's like, I don't know, a little less defined than just like stages. You know, like you can have several different endings in Papers, Please, and your game might end on any given day, depending on how you choose to deal with it. And like, is the ending good? I mean, one of the endings is like, I guess spoilers for Papers, Please, like you die, but your family is able to like escape the country. And I think there's a revolt or something. And it's like, is that good? I don't know. Like, and the game doesn't necessarily like, there's very little that it does beyond telling you this is what happens and doesn't necessarily judge the events and lets you decide whether this seems like something that is a good call. I don't know. I think I kind of approach that more like hands off instead of telling you this was a good thing or a bad thing, or I don't know. And maybe this game does that. I just, you know,
I think
I don't
it
know.
Seems,
that's definitely
it seems
where
pretty
my,
clear.
I, my mind goes on that stuff.
It seems pretty clear not getting one of the endings is a bad ending. Because it specifically says, like, everything is bad for people. Like, there's a great deal of suffering and strife. But, yeah, I will say that one thing that was frustrating to me as well is that you have a skill called Valor, which basically represents how good you are at fighting. And I had Maximum Valor several times in my different playthroughs, which Maximum Valor is described as invincible. Like, that's what they say. Like, there's tiers, and 20 Valor is invincible. And even then, like, if you get challenged to a duel by an Arcanine, you die. Like, it's just, like, there's an option to click on a thing, and it's like, what's it called? Incite the Arcanine or something like this. We'll make them angry at you. And then they just kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it tells you they're going to kill you. And I'm like, I have 20 Valor. Surely I can defend myself. And in one of my playthroughs, my just recent one, I got the opportunity and I was so happy, but it was because I was frustrated that I was happy. So it was, you know, clipped a little bit where there's like one of the main oppositions to your character who's kind of fights against what you want to do is this Arcanine, this young Arc, who's this absolute fucking cunt. And you challenge him to a duel, and you're like, look, I will, you know, show your men that you are no leader. And then in the duel, it's like, you can win only if you have a certain valor. If you have maximum valor, you can just fight him and win. And if you are in the blood tide of your family, you can rely on your ancestors' help. And when... And then I think there's another one which is like rely on dirty tricks, which is just if you have like a high enough scheming or like manipulation, you can like do that. But I had maximum valor, so I just like clicked the valor button and then I beat him.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay.
But, you know, it felt bad all the other times when I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But like gotcha. I got an achievement that only 2% of people have ever gotten with it. The best
wow,
of the best.
What was that?
The best of the best. Defeat him in a duel. Because
oh, nice.
You had to have made all the choices I made and had 20 valor. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it sounds like a kind of cool game.
I think it's a very cool game. As I said, I really like the world building with like the twin gods, and you know, there's like the elder who's like very kind, and there's the younger who's like very stern, and
yeah,
you know, and there's just like, you live in this city that was like, all the countryside was devastated by this like magical spell a long time ago in a revolt. Okay. By a noble, and it's like all soot and not like actual soil anymore. And so you have to like import soil if they want to grow anything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Like constantly, or like they just need new soil?
I mean, presumably they need to like get new soil and like get it properly situated and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to be like a constant thing. There was like always, it's described almost as like there's always wagons of soil coming in. And
gotcha.
And the
I mean, what do they do with the soil that's like they're not using anymore?
I don't know. It could be that they're just expanding fields constantly, or like, you know, like if you have a garden.
Sure.
Like one of the big signs of wealth is having like a garden, because you have to go buy a bunch of fucking soil and then plant stuff. Because it
kind of makes me think of Mistborn.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. I think about the way that, like, the solutions that they came up with for a broken world, you know, or for breaking the world. And
but this is only one area of the Empire has this problem.
Oh, okay. So there's like a whole actual empire beyond this. This isn't like in Mistborn where there's just a tiny chunk of the world that's still available.
No, it's this is like the southern tip of the Empire. It's just one like part of it. And there's like, you know, five other different parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Empire is huge. Yeah, and like there's a time when you're youth, when you're like not 18 to like 20, where you're in the mm-hmm. Empire's capital.
Yeah,
and that's where you like become ennobled by the mantle, and you go to college basically.
Hey, have you played Ori and the Blind Forest, by the way?
I have seen my housemate Sarah play it. I
didn't know she played a lot of video games.
She doesn't. I've gotten her into them.
Oh, nice. It's always a good influence. Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean it's a Metroidvania, which I guess it didn't really register how much it is just a Metroidvania, and it's a very good one. It's very pretty. It's like, I don't know, kind of weird how much its own thing it is in some ways, where it's like it doesn't feel like it's like the combination of things that it is isn't really related to anything else that I've played, you know? Like I've never correlated how like much of an art house beautiful game it is with any kind of Metroidvania before, you know? Not to say that those games aren't incredibly well designed or whatever, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, the difference between like very techie sci-fi pixel art and like, you know,
hand-drawn,
luminous fairy wood kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I remember I have played the hardest part of it, with the Ginkgo tree, and you have to like climb up the Ginkgo tree as it's being filled
Jinso tree or whatever. Yeah, as like the water's exploding out of everywhere. Yeah,
I had to do that for her because she was having.
Okay, yeah, it's very difficult.
Hard.
That was frustrating. I mean, as a person who was playing that game up until that point, and then I got to that point, and I'm just like, this is.
Yeah, I gave her a lesson on game design. I'm like, this is a poorly designed level.
Yeah,
because all it is
because you can't save anywhere. Exactly. All of your whole saving, and so then you just keep on going and going and going, and yeah. Anyways,
yeah, they give you a mechanic to save, and every mm-hmm. other point when you can't save, there's a checkpoint, but mm-hmm. there isn't here.
Yeah, what was I gonna say? Just that what that means, though, I don't know if this was obvious to you, is that because I'm playing Ori, it means I beat Mankind Divided.
Mm.
And I was listening to our, because I was editing this morning before we started recording, I was listening to us talk about Mankind Divided. And boy, does that game not have an ending at all. Like, the whole time I was playing it, I was like, okay, all of these decisions, like in Human Revolution, are going to build up towards choices at the end. And then the game literally, like, you stop this, like, terrorist from basically blowing shit up. And then the game just ends. And there's, like, so many loose threads. Like, one of the big loose threads is that the difference between this game and the previous game is that, like, after the events of the previous game, you basically fell unconscious and somebody worked on your body and added more augmentations while you had, like, months of lapse where you don't have any memories of it. It's like, who did that? They never answer that question. They never, like, get anywhere close to it. Like, it feels like this is the first, like, 30% of the game, and there was, like, a lot that was coming. And it sounds like that's how the development went, too, is that the game was split into two halves, and they just didn't have any money for it, or development just ended, basically. And so they're like, all right, we got to wrap this up, and then just, like, had you watch a TV that reported on the events of the things that happened in the game. It's like, there is so much. I'm just like, I don't know. It was just so weird. So I don't know. It is a great 50% of a game is what maybe what I would say.
I was hoping that the ending would just be like, you know, you finish the thing and it's like, oh yeah, finally I can take a second to relax. And then you, like, go to a coffee shop and you sit down and you get, like, a coffee and you're like,
I mean, kinda. That's kinda how it ends, man. Is like, okay, it's very clear that
you didn't,
like,
let me get to the punchline, Frank.
Well, sorry. Okay. I didn't realize there was a punchline.
You order
your coffee,
you get, like, a cappuccino, and then the person comes out and they give you, like, a latte, and you're like, I didn't ask for this. Hence.
I mean, kinda, man. That's kind of how it ends. Like, legitimately, like, joking about Adam Jensen's, like, whininess is part of the ending. Just stupid. Also, the whole point of the game was, like, they were, like, gonna make it so that you had to make these really hard decisions about, like, hey, you have to choose between these two awful things. And one of the things, spoilers for Mankind Divided, heads up, end of the game. Is that you have to choose between allowing a what's called the Human Restoration Act to pass, which is a piece of legislature that is going to be passed by the UN, which would essentially, like, make all augmented peoples, like, no longer seen as human. And so all of their rights get stripped away from them. They can do, you know, anybody can do whatever they want to them. Or because there's this terrorist guy who is trying to poison all of those members, and if those members die, they're the ones who are preventing the Human Restoration Act from passing, which the dude is augmented, so I'm not really sure why an augmented terrorist would want to, you know, prevent the human, or, like, allow the Human Restoration Act to pass. I think that they were gonna get into that because he's very much an Act One villain, where it's like, you know, it's like Voss in Far Cry 3. It's like, there's somebody beyond this. There's somebody behind all this that's, like, making them act. Who's that person? And whereas in Far Cry 3, Voss is definitely the better villain. In this one, like, clearly this guy's not that interesting, and, like, there's somebody else that's going on. And you know, there's, like, actually, like, he kind of learned what some of that stuff is. Anyways, so, like, that happens, and then you're forced to choose between, like, stopping the Human Restoration Act, and then if you don't face the terrorist right now, like, at this moment, he is going to blow up an adjacent building that has, like, hundreds of innocent civilians in it and stuff, like, you know, men, women, and children and stuff. And it's like, tough. You know, so you're forced with this, like, am I directly responsible for the deaths of all of these people by choosing not to go to them? Or do I save these billionaires who are passing, you know, this piece of legislation that should hypothetically prevent people's rights from being stripped away from, but it's like a more foggy future, right? That turns out you don't have to choose, because if you go and do one, and then he asks, well, you know, where have you been? I'm getting impatient. And then you get the option to go and do the other. I fully expected that I'd go save those billionaires, because I had to, I was like, well, you know, needs of the many, because I'm fucking basic or whatever. But also because that's probably what Adam would do in that situation is, you know, it completely undoes the whole trolley problem. It's like, the trolley can go on this track and kill these people, or go on this track and kill these people. But if you, but you can stop the, if you stop the trolley from doing it this way, it'll kill these ones. Turns out there's also a stop button. Oh, okay. Instead of pulling the lever one way or another, there's just a stop the trolley button. It's, great.
It's more like the trolley's moving at, you know, an inch per hour. So you can just go and pick up everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that. Like, they had just evacuated. I fully expected when I saved the billionaires that I would look out the window and see, like, an apartment building go down in London, because that would have been really cinematic and impactful, but they decided not to do that for some reason and let me go. And I guess because they thought that I needed to have a final boss fight. It feels like kind of cowardly, especially because this game is actually really good at doing what I'm going to call a conversational boss fight. Like, based on you, it's really good about dropping information about characters in the game who you encounter that you're then like, oh, like by the time you actually meet them, you actually know a lot about them from adjacent looking into things. And if you play your cards right and influence them correctly, you can kind of talk them off of ledges or like prevent them from doing like horrible stuff. Or, you know, maybe you fuck up and they make a terrible decision. And so it's like, that could have been a conversational boss fight where you convince them to successfully, you know, not commit this, you know, this act or whatever. You know, so you could have had a boss fight either way or whatever, but no, I guess they just needed the game to end on a boss fight. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it was just like really dumb. Just, it very much reeked of like, we ran out of money. So,
I see. That's disappointing.
Yeah, kind of. Anyway, so I'm going to play Manifold Garden after I beat Ori, because I'm almost done with Ori. Manifold. And then Outer Wilds, because I've been meaning to play that.
I've heard Outer Wilds is very, very interesting. I think it's your kind of game.
It's definitely one of those games that, I mean, it's made a lot of people's like games of the decade, like top 10 games of the decade list. So,
yeah, I've also been playing some Deep Rock Galactic, which is just, you know, co-op dwarf miner simulator 2012.
Mm-hmm. Heard about that one. It's in space though, right?
Space dwarves, yeah.
Space dwarves, nice. The best kind. The rarest kind.
Yeah.
Okay, we are gonna start, but there was actually one last thing I was gonna say. I'm considering restarting Pillars of Eternity.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I think I've probably racked up about 70 hours in that game from two different playthroughs. But I don't know if I want to play through using my current save, because none of my stats are high enough to actually make any of the choices like happen. Like, you need to have a certain high enough resolve or whatever. And you can't just like raise those stats anywhere in game. So you just are locked out of options.
That feels pretty bad.
Which sucks. Yeah.
How do you raise them?
I don't think you can. Like, I legitimately don't think, I haven't seen a single event in all of my leveling up. I think I'm like level 7 or something. And like, yeah, I don't think I've been given an option to increase my base attribute points.
Oh, so you're going to remake a character and at character creation, make like a high enough
intelligence or something that I can just do something with any of them. But like, also because
I thought when you level you know up, how, you get to increase an attribute, no?
You get to increase skills, okay. But skills are like their own separate thing. So skills are based on your attributes, but they like do their own stuff.
Okay.
I don't know. The main thing is just because I'm kind of out of the loop as to, I'm not that out of the loop into what was happening in the game, but my approach has kind of been like, I want to just play through a game in its entirety instead of like picking up in the middle of somewhere if I'm going to be doing this sort of approach to games that I have been doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just like, that seems like a lot. So I've just been pushing it further away. I'm like, no, I'm going to play through Ori. I'm going to do Manifold Garden. I'm going to do these easy ones. I'm going to play through Obra Dinn. That's going to be a good one.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. That one, another one of those like games of the year, games of the decade.
Yeah. My list right now is Ori and the Blind Forest, then Manifold Garden, then Outer Wilds, then actually Torment Tides of Numenera. Yeah, because that one is like longer and kind of has the Pillars vibes. But I've just been told it has really, really good lore. Like, tons of different lore drops that don't really connect, but that's fine because from us, you know, just harvest some good shit. Then Return of the Obra Dinn, then Mass Effect Legendary Edition. So,
oh,
you know,
you're gonna, I bet you're gonna
that'll take me through July. Yeah. Oh, hey, we already had that conversation 2 weeks ago.
See, we can't recycle. Never recycle anything in this we podcast. We can't.
Mm-mm. All right, we got to pick episode stuff, huh?
Yeah, we do. You're right.